Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to those who know that the world's political, religious, military, economic, media, and academic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission is to know who is working against our interests, to understand how and why they're doing so. Because exposing and condemning such schemes, even when they're religious, patriotic, or political, isn't hateful, it's caring. In our concluding hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to continue to explore Paul's letter to the Galatians, comparing it to what Yahweh had to say to prove conclusively that the founder of the Christian religion, Paul, was a liar. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. A couple of days ago, I had the opportunity to expose a liar. He masquerades as the Muslim guy. He is a keynote speaker at almost every major university in the United States. He has been interviewed on virtually every major media channel in the United States. His name is Arsalan Iftikhar. And now that we have an Islamic scholar, someone who knows the religion of Islam probably better than anyone alive, a man who I've had the pleasure of knowing for many years now. He is the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Face of Muhammad and Islam. IQ Al-Rasuli, how are you this morning?
I'm fine, sir. How are you?
Good, actually. Evening for you, afternoon for most of our listeners. I devoted an entire program, in fact, 2 hours, earlier this week, to a response that was written by a fellow that that calls himself the Muslim guy. Are you familiar with him?
I don't know him, no.
Okay. You may want to, if you have a computer handy, just Google Muslim. In fact, I even think it's just the URL is simple. It's MuslimGuy.com. He's someone that you'll want to get to know and oppose. He is a really shifty character, probably the single most quoted Muslim apologist in the West. Certainly, the most quoted Muslim apologist in the United States. He is a professor at DePaul University in Chicago.
Of course, Chicago, Dearborn, Michigan. That's where the Muslims are.
Yeah, of course. I am extraordinarily angry at the religion of Islam. I will call it righteous indignation over their kidnapping of 250 12 to 15 year old girls and hauling them away to rape them and to sell them as sex slaves. I am not the least bit tolerant when religious men think that it is their godly appointed duty to abuse little girls. And so when I see someone try to exonerate the religion and to make it look like what they're doing is un-Islamic as opposed to Islamic, I cast them into the same lot. I would view the Muslim guy for trying to persuade academicians and politicians and the general public into believing that Boko Haram is not paying attention to the Quran. In fact, that they're doing the opposite of what the Quran says. I find that equally offensive to the rapists.
You're very gentle, with all due respect. It's not only offensive. A person like this should be found guilty of blasphemy because he's lying about the Quran. He's
correct.
Blaspheming the Quran.
Yes, that is correct. He is. He's lying about Allah. He's lying about the Quran. Now, in this particular case, I want to go back to the defense that he made of the Quran and then have you share with our listeners what the Quran actually said. I attempted to do so a couple of days ago, but I think you can do a better job than I did. His article that was published by CNN 2 days ago begins as follows. Hey, Boko Haram, have you read the Quran lately? most of the 1.6 billion Muslims in the world have. By the way, that's not true. And we're utterly, yeah, it's not even remotely true that that most of the 1.6 billion Muslims in the world have read the Quran. That is, and you think you're laughing, but of course, because, well, first of all, half of the Muslims in the world can't read because they're women. Okay, so that's takes half of them away. So you can't have most because half would be women, and they can't read. And the second part of that is that of the remaining 800 million Muslims, most of them are also illiterate.
Correct.
And most of them
don't read Arabic, by the way.
Oh, of course.
Most of them don't read Arabic. The ones in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, in Indonesia or Malaysia, they don't read Arabic.
Right. And, you know, and actually most Muslims are like most Catholics for the first 1,000 years after Constantine created the official church. They were not even allowed to have copies of the scriptures for fear that they might misinterpret them. And in the case of Muslims, they go to their imam, they go to their Friday prayers to keep from being slaughtered by good Muslims in their communities, and they are told what to think. They don't actually have Qurans for fear of being accused of misusing one. And so my guess is that that is probably 10% of Muslims that actually have read the Quran?
I think it's the correct figure, yes. Mostly 10%, yes.
Yeah. So his first statement, most of the 1.6 billion Muslims have read the Quran, he would be off by at least a magnitude of five times, because it's it can't be anywhere close to 51%.
Okay.
Yeah, can't even be it close. All right. That's the beginning of this. And, of course, the idea that that he's proposing here is that Boko Haram's leadership has not read the Quran. The leader of Boko Haram, what was his occupation and education prior to leading the Islamic terrorist group? Do you know?
Not really, no.
Okay. You know what his name is?
No.
Abu Bakr.
Ah.
Could you tell us, our listeners, just a little bit about his namesake, about Abu Bakr and his love for little girls and his relationship with Muhammad?
Yeah, Abu Bakr was the father of Aisha.
Mm-hmm.
When he gave her, his daughter,
uh-huh.
to Muhammad at the mm-hmm. age of six,
right.
to try her.
Right. And by the way, he didn't just give her to Muhammad at the age of six. She was thrown into Muhammad's bed at the age of six.
At the age of six.
Right. All right. And Abu Bakr was the primary financier of Islam. Had it not been for Abu Bakr, Islam would not have made it out of Mecca, wouldn't even have survived its first year. Now, that's the man we're talking about here. His name is Abu Bakr. He was a student of Islamic studies. So he went to school to become a student of Islamic studies. His expertise is in Tawheed, the oneness of Allah.
Tawheed, yes.
Yeah, Tawheed, the oneness of Allah. All right. So he has a college degree in Islam. So what do you think the likelihood is that Abu Bakr has not read the Quran?
Well, it's zero.
Okay, zero. So we have two lies right at the beginning. Then as he goes on to say, most of the 1.6 million Muslims in the world have, and we're utterly certain that it condemns kidnapping young girls and selling them into slavery. No matter what you say, Allah tells you. Does the Quran anywhere speak prohibit slavery or the enslavement of little girls?
Never. On the contrary, the Quran incites and sanctifies Muslims to rape, to enslave non-Muslims, and Muslims who are of different sects also.
Correct. And is it not true that that Islamic behavior, that is, the Islamic religion, is guided by three things: what the Quran says, what Muhammad did, and what Muhammad said.
Absolutely. That's Sharia.
Okay. Is there any other element of Islam? Is there anything apart from what Muhammad did, which is Sunnah, what Muhammad said, which is Hadith, and the Quran, which is Muhammad's recital? Is there anything else anywhere in the world that is representative of Islam other than those three things?
Cannot exist. Impossible.
Okay. Does the Quran say that Muhammad is the perfect example to follow?
Of course. He was the most perfect male ever created.
Okay. Did Muhammad ever engage in kidnapping? Ever?
Is that a question?
Yeah, is that a question? Did he?
He lived off kidnapping. He lived off enslavement. He made money out of it.
Okay.
It was a mission.
The first terrorist raid that Muhammad engaged in, it was called the Battle of Badr, correct?
Correct.
In it, did he attack an opposing army that was threatening him?
No, he attacked a civilian caravan.
Okay. And when he attacked the civilian caravan, what did he do with those he didn't kill?
Well, he sold some of them, and then he murdered others.
Yeah, so he either murdered them, or he took them as captives and either ransomed them or enslaved them. Is that correct?
Correct. 100%. It's in their books. I mean, it's not as if you and I are creating these things. It's in the Hadith.
No.
It's
also in the Quran. It's also in the Quran. The eighth surah of the Quran was written specifically to sanctify the behavior of stealing and of enslaving and of kidnapping for ransom. That's the entire purpose of the eighth surah of the Quran, was to sanctify Muhammad's ghoulish behavior at Badr when he robbed a civilian caravan. There's no other purpose of the eighth surah. So the eighth surah exists expressly for that purpose.
Correct. And Anfal means for plunder, booty.
Right. And from a Muslim point of view, booty was not just stolen property, but stolen lives. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct.
We'll return with IQ Al-Rasuli after the commercial break and continue to expose the lies of the Muslim guy. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. The next line from the Muslim guy, this professor at DePaul University, the single most quoted Islamic apologist in the United States, says, as a Muslim human rights lawyer, before we read any further, Muslim human rights lawyer, are there any human rights
in Islam?
None, right? I mean, there's no rights for women. There's no rights for minority. In fact, there's really actually no rights in Islam, even for a fundamentalist Muslim. Even if you are a good jihadist Muslim, even you have no rights in Islam, because the Quran specifically says that a Muslim has no choice, that their religion and their lives have been preordained and chosen for them by Allah, and that a Muslim has absolutely no rights whatsoever.
Correct.
Good Muslims have no rights. The bad Muslims are good Muslims are ordered to kill, so they have no rights. The non-Muslims in an Islamic realm are treated worse than we would treat an animal. They have no rights, and women have no rights.
Yes.
How could you be a human rights lawyer? Complete oxymoron.
Upside down world. That's what we have today. I mean, how could he be a professor in any university in the Western world? I have no idea.
Well, he cited to defend his position, and if we lived in a world of morality and consequence, he would not only have been fired, he would have been disgraced. But we don't live in a world of consequence or of moral objectivity.
Well,
go ahead.
We can't fire him, but we can disgrace him.
We can. So he says, as a Muslim human rights lawyer, it is obscene and absolutely un-Islamic for these lunatic human rights traffickers to invoke the name of God while kidnapping young girls and threatening to sell them into sexual slavery.
Can I interrupt, please?
No, absolutely.
He said God.
Yeah.
Allah is not God.
That's correct.
So he's already deceiving the Americans for the fourth time.
Correct.
Calling Allah God is untrue, because Allah is definitely most definitely not the same as the God of Jesus, Moses, and Abraham.
There's only one God. There's only one deity who's actually proven that he exists and proven that he is God. His name is Yahweh. And he says any God by any other name is false.
Correct.
He says I only have one name, and he gives his name 7,000 times in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And since he conceived DNA and created the universe, I think there is a significant likelihood that he knows his own name. And that name is
you. And I know very well that in many of the new translations of the Quran, the word Allah, which appears in the Arabic language, is mistranslated deliberately and deceptively to call it God.
Of course. There is the Quran is very clear that Allah is one of their God's names. It's not the only one of their God's names. In fact, the Islamic God of Muhammad was named Ar-Rahman before he was named Allah. There are even surahs devoted to the God named Ar-Rahman.
Yeah.
And the only reason that Ar-Rahman did not stay as the exclusive name of the Islamic God is that while Muhammad was in Mecca, Ar-Rahman was the only name that he used for God. Because when he was in Mecca and he was right near the Kaaba, where Allah was the biggest and baddest stone, you know, the Meccans might have expected Allah's spokesperson to be able to elicit a miracle from Allah, like maybe the stone would roll over or something. And so he never mentioned Allah while he was in Mecca. It wasn't until he fled Mecca in shame, after he had created the satanic verses and multiple gods, that he went away from Ar-Rahman and began to call his god Allah.
By the way, the Rahman was actually the god of the Yemen.
That's correct.
When he started, literally, I mean, that's a fact. It's not a matter of negotiation also.
Right,
Rahman,
it's a fact.
Was the god of the Yemen.
Mm-hmm.
Allah now, the reason was the god of the Kaaba, of Mecca, of the Quraysh tribe.
That's correct.
That's why they, in fact, in the verses of the Quran, which ask, why was he using the Rahman?
Yeah.
The Meccans were asking, why was he using the Rahman?
Oh, I can tell you the answer to the question, and you know the answer as well. It's because the first one-third of the Quran, when it is arranged chronologically, is comprised of Muhammad plagiarizing and twisting the Hanif poetry of the Yemenite pagans. And their god was Ar-Rahman, and therefore that was Muhammad's god. We're having a conversation with IQ Abrasuli, the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. Rather than it being absolutely un-Islamic for men invoking the name of God to kidnap young girls and to threaten to sell them into slavery, that is the absolute epitome of appropriate Islamic behavior. Is that true?
Absolutely true. But I would like our listeners to double check us.
Okay.
I'm going to quote from the Hadith. Sahih Muslim Hadith 4.1062. Abu Huraira reported that the Messenger of Allah said, I have been given superiority over all the other prophets in six respects. I have been given words which are concise but comprehensive in meaning. I have been made victorious by terror. Spoils have been made lawful to me. The earth has been made for me clean and a place of worship. And finally, I have been sent to all mankind, and the line of prophets is closed with me. This is not ambiguous. He is saying that no, he has been made victorious with terror, that the world belongs to him, that the spoils have been made lawful to him. I mean, what more does anybody need?
Including a Quran, where all of its Medinan surahs speak of and brag about Muhammad's conquests, where he is noted as enslaving, raping, murdering, robbing, all manner of heinous behavior. As a matter of fact, if you were to pull terrorist raids out of the second half of the Quran, and a call to arms and against all mankind out of the second half of the Quran, I'm talking about Quran chronologically, not the jumbled mess that it's ordered in. And if you were to remove from the hadith Muhammad's engaging in terrorist raids that led to them enslaving the population and stealing their possessions, you'd be left with a book about as thick as the average Dr. Seuss story.
Correct.
And there's really nothing left. If you pull out terrorism and stealing and enslaving and raping, plundering from the hadith, Muhammad's example and words, and from the Quran surahs revealed in Medina after Muhammad fled Mecca in shame after the satanic verses, you pull those things out, you wouldn't
there's
even have enough to fill a pamphlet.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing left, literally.
Yeah.
Nothing left.
And so the opposite of what the man says is actually true. It is un-Islamic.
He's using taqiyya. This
yes.
is the most remarkable thing about America these days. Forget about Europe. Europe, I can understand, is going down. But America, you don't have many Muslims. Even if you had 10 million Muslims, out of 308 million, still a minority. And yet they're getting away with murder.
Correct.
They are literally getting away with murder, both in physical murder and also in educational murder. They're destroying
correct.
Your universities.
That's
anybody
correct.
Who wants to speak about Islam, they make a threat and the university knuckles under.
Yeah. Oh, you can speak about Islam so long as you're going to lie on behalf of the religion. If you wish to tell the truth, you're not welcome. Okay, he to prove his point, he said the leaders of Boko Haram have clearly never read the Holy Quran, which states quite clearly that, and this is in quotes now, quite clearly that oppression is worse than murder. He's quoting from Quran chapter 2. Verse 191, oppression is worse than murder. Now, what he's inferring here is that murder is bad and oppression is even worse than murder, correct?
Correct.
Okay, can you share with our listeners the context of the second surah of the Quran? Who according to Muhammad, is guilty of oppression, and who, according to Muhammad, has been called to murder them?
Well, for those who study the subject, the oppressors were supposed to be his own tribe, Quraysh, whom he was insulting for a decade, insulting and threatening them with hell, and they wanted to defend themselves. So he considers them as oppressors. This verse is specifically about Arabs in Arabia. It has nothing to do outside Arabia. It has nothing to do outside Islam.
Now, I'm going to challenge that a little bit here, if I may.
Of course.
When you read the context of this portion of the second surah, and you put it into the context of the hadith that Muhammad issued at this time, well, it is true that he blamed the Quraysh for oppressing him, when in fact it was the other way around.
Absolutely.
There is more to it than that. The oppressors are not simply the Quraysh. Because when you read this, the second surah, it also tells you that the oppressors were the Jewish rabbis in Yathrib, today's Medina, who Muhammad went to buy Talmud stories so that he paid the rabbis to recite from their Talmud so that he could come up with new material for his Quran. And he was blaming then the rabbis for laughing at him when he misquoted what they had read to him. And he was blaming them for charging him for these stories. And so in the second Quran leading up to 191, in addition to telling the Muslims that it was okay for them to go kill the Quraysh because the Quraysh had oppressed them, he was also telling the Muslims that it was okay to go kill the Jews because the Jews were making an unfair profit by charging Muhammad for Talmud stories.
Correct.
Now, is my slight addition to the context of this, is it consistent with what you understand to be true?
Yes, but he adds up, in the verses, but if they fight you, slay them. Well, here we have a group of thugs who are threatening the Jews of Medina, who is threatening the Quraysh tribe, mm-hmm. that unless they convert to Islam and accept mm-hmm. Muhammad as a prophet, they will have to be killed. So okay. They left them no choice. So really, all this verse is totally meaningless. The gentleman, well, I'm calling my gentleman out of being respectful to your mm-hmm. program, is bullcrapping.
Of course.
There's nothing in it which is absolutely right.
If you have a Quran handy, could you read for our listeners the 190th verse of the second surah?
You want it in Arabic or you want it in English?
No, let's give it to our listeners in both languages.
Okay. In English it says, fight in the cause of Allah those who fight you. But do not transgress limits. For Allah loveth not transgressors. وَقَاتِلُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ الَّذِينَ يُقَاتِلُونَكُمْ وَلَا تَعْتَدُوا إِنَّ اللَّهَ لَا يُحِبُّ الْمُعْتَدِينَ. But this is not true. He was always the aggressor. He was always the instigator of trouble. And he was always in excess of what he should be. He mutilated the very people, the leaders of the Quraysh at the Battle of Badr. He mutilated them.
Correct.
Not only did he slaughter them, but he mutilated them.
Yeah. How could going after a civilian caravan, stealing the property, killing the men, in fact, he actually tortured those who survived the first onslaught so that he would be more successful in capturing more of their property, and then selling the remaining survivors into slavery. How could you transgress the limits more than that?
Exactly.
So,
exactly, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Right. By the way, you know what
everything.
Right. By the way, the Fahd Foundation for publishing Qurans in Mecca put in parentheses after the verse that you've just read. This is the first verse revealed in connection with jihad, and it was supplemented. Supplanted is what they should have said, by the ninth surah. So what they're saying here is right. What they're saying here is that this limitation on jihad was lifted by the ninth surah.
Correct.
And so by the ninth surah, there is no limit. There is no limitation. That is correct. Abrogated. And by the way, every student of the Quran knows that. What we've just shared, that the limits were lifted, everyone knows that. This guy that's making the statement, he knows it as well.
I know, but he is accusing the Boko Haram of not reading the Quran. Most certainly he hasn't read the Quran.
That is correct. Now, okay. Can you read now what Quran 2:191? That was the passage that he cited to infer that in Islam oppression and murder were bad, and that murder was not as bad. Oppression was even worse than murder.
Okay.
Can you read Quran 2:191? And when you come to the al-fitna, which is the Arabic word for polytheism, disbelief, oppression, and many other things, you may want to amplify it and explain precisely what Muhammad meant when he used that term. So, Quran 2:191.
Okay, it says, and slay them, waqtuluhum, wherever you catch them, and turn them out from where they have turned you out. For tumult and oppression are worse than slaughter. But fight them not at the sacred mosque, unless they first fight you there. But if they fight you, slay them. Such is the reward of those who suppress faith. It says here, for tumult and oppression, well, fitna, fitna here using tumult and oppression is worse than slaughter. Fitna usually is when you are not following what Muhammad is telling you to do, or breaking the rules of what Muhammad to do.
Okay. Yeah, it's normally translated continuing to engage in polytheism, disbelief of Muhammad, rejection of Muhammad. So what he's saying is rejecting Muhammad, not submitting or surrendering to Islam, is worse than slaughter. So, so what he's approving here is that as a Muslim now, it is appropriate for you to murder anyone who does not surrender to Islam, because not surrendering to Islam is the greatest crime that a person can commit.
Correct.
So the passage that the Muslim guy cited is actually says the antithesis of what he implied. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation with IQ Al-Rasuli, and what we're showing is how those who quote the Quran out of context and who mistranslate it usually convey the opposite of what the Quran actually says. In this particular case, you have the Muslim guys writing on behalf of CNN, saying that Quran 2191 prohibits oppression, and that it speaks negatively of oppression, when in fact, when you read Quran 2191, it actually tells Muslims to go fight and kill anyone who doesn't accept Islam, who doesn't surrender to Islam, wherever they are, and that the failure to surrender to Islam is far worse than mass murder. So mass murder is appropriate if somebody does not, if a population group does not surrender to Islam. And I don't know how you could have a statement that was more hostile to the position that this man is advancing. Is there one?
No, but he is quoting it, misrepresenting it, but this has been done for the last 1400 years. And they continue misquoting or taking out of context verses which they try to show the Western mind, who doesn't know anything about the Quran, how peaceful Islam is. But in fact, it is not. There is no peace in Islam.
But why wouldn't...
Look at them as we, I mean,
why wouldn't someone... Why wouldn't someone other than you and I hold them accountable? I mean, why are we the only ones... I'm sure there's
no
a front page magazine or someplace else that is trying to hold him accountable. But here he just cited and misquoted a passage that he took out of context to create the impression that it said the opposite of what it really did. Now, if this is the best he can do, and it actually says the opposite of what he's trying to promote, what does that tell you about the true nature of Islam?
But even let us assume for a billionth of a second that this is the perfect verse in the Quran that is peaceful.
Yes.
But all the other verses contradict this verse. I'm being the devil's advocate.
Okay.
Assuming he is right. He chose this verse.
Okay.
But all the other verses contradict this one.
The reason I'm laughing.
Contradict this one.
The reason I'm laughing, I do. This verse says, kill them wherever you find them.
Yes.
And it says that mass murder is justified because the worst crime is failing to surrender to Islam.
Yes.
If that's the best verse you've got to show that your religion is tolerant and peaceful, you really are, you're promoting something really special.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Now can you also turn your Quran to the 24th surah, the 33rd verse of the 24th surah? He said that the Quran says that nobody shall force girls to commit prostitution. And My Quran reads, they shall not force slave girls to commit prostitution. But in the very next statement, Muhammad says, but if you do force them into prostitution, don't worry about it. Allah is forgiving.
Correct. That's exactly what it says.
Can you share then Quran 24:33 with our listeners? Because he made it sound like that the Quran was opposed to prostitution.
Well, according to this, it says, let those who find not to wear withal for marriage keep themselves chaste until Allah gives them the means out of His grace. And if any of your slaves ask for a deed in writing to enable them to earn their freedom for a certain sum, give them such a deed. If you know any good in them, ye give them something yourself out of the means which Allah has given to you. But force not your maids to prostitution when they desire chastity, in order that you may make a gain in the goods of this life. But if anyone compels them, yet after such compulsion, is Allah often forgiving, most merciful. So he negated all the compassion and mercy that was mentioned in the early part of the verse. By one
and he's,
ending.
Right, and by the way, he's talking about...
to prostitution, don't worry about it.
Yeah, and he's talking about slave girls, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, slave girls.
Okay, since the Quran, since all of Islam is based on three things, Muhammad's example, Muhammad's words, and the Quran, was Muhammad a rapist?
100%. A multiple rapist. A serial rapist.
Did Muhammad enslave little girls?
All the time. The hadith says so.
So Boko Haram is following Muhammad's example.
100%. That is why they are the most perfect Muslims.
Thank you, IQ.